Live from Utrecht, this is Bitcoin
Explained.
Hey Sjors.
Hello.
First of all, I want to thank CoinKite, the sponsor of our show, for producing a beautiful CoinKite Q, which Sjors just passed me in my hands. Sjors, what is this? I see it has a full QWERTY keyboard. I see it's a ECC calculator.
An elliptic curve cryptography calculator.
It is a beautiful device. Yes. It's unfortunate we don't have a video for our podcast.
It essentially looks like a Nintendo, I guess.
You mean a Game Boy?
Or a Game Boy. See, I did not play that many computer games as
clearly.
A kid. Well, I played PC games. Anyhow.
So this is a hardware wallet?
Yeah, I believe it's essentially the same as their other CoinKite wallets. It's just bigger.
Yeah, bigger screen, bigger everything.
Yeah, but my understanding is that fundamentally it's very similar, so it's not like they're introducing completely new security assumptions.
Right. Did you buy this or did you get this?
No, because, I got this one for free. Sponsored. I don't think we got it because we're sponsored. I always get them because I test them as a developer.
Fair enough. All right. Well, that's our sponsor, CoinKite. They got a Q device. You can buy this, right? Online, go to CoinKite.com, CoinKite.com.
Probably.
You go, yours, something like that. All right. So today, actually, we have another guest.
Hello.
Jesse DeWitt. He's back.
Here I am again. Yeah.
Good. Maybe for those that didn't listen to the previous episode, you can repeat a small introduction of yourself.
Yeah, a small introduction. Jesse DeWitt. I'm a Lightning developer working for Breeze.
Right. So we got you in last episode because we've been getting some requests to do Lightning episodes, and Sjors and I are sort of getting out of our depth with like advanced Lightning topics. So very thankful that you came back. We're going to do another Lightning episode. This time we're going to discuss splicing.
But before we get carried away by the wind.
Yeah. There's something else we want to discuss real quick, right, Sjors?
That's right.
We made an episode on the Tornado Cash trial at some point. This was episode 69. The trial actually happened this week. In previous, there were like hearings. There were,
Previously, there were just like five or so over the last 2 years meta hearings. So they were about his pretrial detention, about which documents the defense wants. That sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This week there was 2 days of the actual trial in Den Bosch with extremely uncomfortable seats. Well, I mean, the seats are fine. They have little pillows, but if you have to sit on them for 8 hours, it's very uncomfortable. There was quite a few people in attendance, like multiple journalists, even from the mainstream media, and lots of, some of his supporters. Probably also half the FBI, I wouldn't know, but some people in suits.
That spoke American?
Maybe, at least they,
So you attended, and so what I recall, I mean, I was at the hearings and I was at the trial briefly, but not for the full 2 days like you.
Mm-hmm.
And what I recall from the hearings, at least, was that they revealed... It really seemed like the case was going to boil down to should a DAO be considered like a company. That was like...
No.
Oh.
It goes beyond that. They're basically saying the whole DAO is just a little fantasy. And really, the three people were in control of everything.
That's kind of what I mean. It's not really decentralized in any meaningful
way. They don't really care what the company is. They're saying that Tornado Cash, whatever that is, whether that's a company or an entity or just a group of people, is like a business in the way it's operated. You know, as they would, like if they were prosecuting, say, a criminal organization, they don't care that it's, Mafia Incorporated doesn't exist, right?
Yeah.
So in that sense, they're arguing it's just a business and they're doing things for profit, and the profit came from pumping the token, if I translate it.
Yeah, the Tornado token.
Yeah, because it's very clear that there is no money coming directly from the transactions on the mixer.
Uh-huh.
In the way it's designed, we explained that in episode 69. But they said, even though there's no direct flow of money, they're still profiting from it. But even if they weren't profiting from it, they're still allowing mixing to happen, and that itself is enough. So it's a pretty fundamental case, I would say. Like in the beginning, we didn't know if maybe there was some gotcha, like something really different that would have made the case. So, yeah, for example, they were not running relayers themselves, any of that stuff.
The original concern, at least, was, you know, writing open source code should not be illegal, basically, whatever people use it for.
Yeah, so the prosecutor keeps saying that writing open source is fine, it's great, we love it, but if you want to make money with it in any way, I guess, then you can't do it, so...
Right.
It's like, you know, privacy is legal, but if you make any money offering it, it's not legal.
Right.
That's sort of my takeaway from it. And they're trying to make the distinction between VPN privacy, which is or like communications, and money privacy, which are objects or money, which is treated differently.
Were there any like new insights this week as far as you could say or compared to the hearings that I attended? Or was it kind of the same thing, just a bit more?
Well, the hearings you attended were not supposed to be about the case itself.
I know, but they kind of were.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were, exactly, because there's lots of media present. I don't know. I don't really think so. It felt to me like it was roughly just, you know, going into more detail, explaining which law articles, you know, the prosecution would explain, okay, you know, this money laundering, different articles, and we're not talking about Article A, but we're talking about Article B, that sort of clarification. So I took a lot of notes, but I really have to take my notes and go talk to an actual legal expert to understand the meaning
right.
of exactly what was said. And then the prosecution always has the advantage. They can paint a very nice narrative, a story. But the defense does not have that. It's not so easy. I mean, they try to explain how open source works and that decentralization is a good thing and that privacy is important, that sort of stuff. But a lot of the time, they just have to spend shooting holes at individual arguments of the prosecution. So they would have to say, well, if you look at Article 64B, you know, the word holding means, you know, this, and it doesn't mean that. And they also have to try 15 different arguments just to see if one of the 15 works. And that makes it, as the audience, makes it more difficult to understand. And especially if you're not a lawyer yourself, it's hard to estimate whether, you know, just because he says it with conviction doesn't mean it works. And it's important to know that we don't have jury trials. So the goal is not to explain things and to convince a jury of non legal people, like in the US, it is merely to convince the judges. And the judges have already received, I don't know, a million pages of documents and reports, and they've all read it. So they also already know the arguments that both sides are going to make. So it's kind of a performative thing almost, where you have to say it out loud so people can listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
But the judges are kind of like, just, you know, behind the screen, and they're listening, and they, yeah.
And the verdicts will come in
May 14th.
May 14th. All right. Well, last question. So what's, I guess we discussed this in the actual episode, episode 69, so we don't have to get into it. But the reason you attended is it could have relevance for Bitcoin development as well, potentially.
In the long run, it will.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure about that, because it's kind of a moving game where, you know, the front line is moving, and maybe you could say, oh, the front line is in shitcoin land, but if you read some of the arguments that the prosecutor is making, they're really generic arguments like, if you make something that is decentralized, the fact that you could have made it centralized, but you made it decentralized already means you deliberately did something to aid money laundering. So if that argument stands, then, you know, basically Satoshi would be screwed.
Right. Okay.
Satoshi could have made a centralized system, right? And he didn't. And he made money.
Yeah, yeah.
Arguably. We don't know if he has any money.
I mean, he still had to earn it as well, right? He still had to mine it.
Yeah, but he wouldn't have been able to mine it if it didn't exist. I don't know what kind of argument would be made there.
Anyways, thanks for your sacrifice. I'm impressed to hear about the cushion situation and that you pulled through anyways.
I found that if you just pile some jackets and stuff, then it's a little bit more comfortable.
You got it all figured out.
Yeah.
All right, one more quick note before we actually get to splicing. You wanted to mention something about Mara Pool. Mara did this thing with the block thing, which you could see on Mempool Space. That's what this is about, right?
Yeah, if you are into nonsense, then you may have noticed that Mara Pool mined a block that, if you look at it on Mempool.space, it looks like a picture of an M, just because of the way Mempool.space visualizes
it's that
it.
Logo, yeah.
If you go to any other website, it won't look like that.
Mm-hmm.
Point is, they achieve this by putting transactions in a very specific order. all these transactions are nonsensical op return transactions.
But all of them? Not all of them, right?
As far as I know, the whole block. Yeah.
The whole block was nonsense?
Yep. I'll get to that.
Okay.
So basically, we had episode 84 where we talked about 6 months ago, Marapool mined an invalid block. And the reason they mined an invalid block was because they were putting transactions in the wrong order. So if transaction A is created and transaction B spends transaction A, they must appear in that block in that order. So transaction A first, transaction B next.
Mm-hmm.
And they just sorted them all by, I don't know, by name or something crazy. And so the order was wrong and the block was invalid. And they lost a couple hundred thousand dollars. But now looking back that they have created this graffiti block, I guess, where the order of the transaction is used as a feature, my guess is that's what they were sort of trying to get to. That still does not explain why they tested that on mainnet instead of on testnet.
They were experimenting back then.
Yeah, but the reason, I guess, why they picked op return transactions this time is because you can just make them all independent and the order, you know, doesn't matter. You don't get an invalid order.
Yeah.
But it would be more, you know, if they want to continue this artistic career of theirs, I think it would be better to mine real transactions that are actually paying, you know, roughly the maximum fee that you would mine, maybe slightly less, and then order those in a visual pattern. So you do not know in advance what the block is going to look like. Your algorithm just has to figure out how to take whatever's in the mempool and write copyright shorts on it. Yeah,
you just got to make sure that the order is still not invalid.
Exactly. So you have to... Exactly. Mm. So it's much more, it would require significantly more skill.
Mm-hmm.
I do not believe it is a good use of anyone's time, but if you are into this, please do it well.
Right. Okay. So that sort of explains what was maybe, probably, possibly going on in episode 84. So that was a second callback to an earlier episode. Now let's make a new episode, Shores.
Yes, good idea.
Yes, sir. You're down to make a new episode?
Let's make a new episode.
Let's make one about splicing. Okay, so splicing is a concept that exists in Lightning. First, what is it? Let's start with a very basic one-sentence explanation. What is splicing?
Splicing is basically giving you the capability to change the capacity of an existing channel. So
I have a channel with shorts, say. There's, let's say one Bitcoin in that channel. And we can increase that to 2 Bitcoin or half a Bitcoin, increase or decrease.
Yeah,
that's what splicing is. And why would anyone want to do this? Maybe that's a good follow. What's the actual benefit here? Why not just open a new channel, or why not, I don't know, receive coins in the channel or what? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So a Lightning channel, you basically want the lifetime of a Lightning channel to be very long, and you want during the lifetime of the channel, you want it to be operational, and then definitely as a routing node, for example. If you want to increase the capacity of your channel as a routing node, you want your channel to always be available, because otherwise people won't be able to route payments over it and you won't make any fees.
Mm-hmm.
The alternative would be closing and opening a channel, or opening an additional channel, for example. It saves a lot in chain fees in the end, basically, as well.
Why does it save in chain fees versus opening an additional channel? Why? What's the benefit?
It's basically the closing cost that you don't have. Because, you splice in this channel, so that means... Maybe we should talk a little bit about how splicing works.
Hang on, that makes sense. I mean, eventually you're going to want to close the channels. And if you keep opening new channels, that means you have to close all the channels. While if you replace the same channel, then you only have to close one channel. So exactly. That's what you're saving, essentially, right?
Yeah, that's what you're
saving. And it's half the transactions in the long run, right? Because closing is one transaction, opening is one transaction.
Right.
Yeah.
Though I guess you theoretically could combine them. I think you mentioned another reason why this was good.
Well, you want it to always work, and the fees are, there's less fees, less on-chain transaction.
Yeah, we covered the part that it always works. So because if you close a channel, then nothing works until you've reopened it and waited 6 blocks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so if you would close and reopen a channel, your channel is temporarily unavailable, so nobody will be able to route over it. with splicing, and we'll get into that, you'll be able to keep using the channel while you've spent your previous channel, basically. During the splice, you can...
Okay, why is this like a challenge at all? Why is this a problem? What is the challenge here?
Why wasn't this finished in 2017, like the white paper promised?
So yeah, or just why isn't this standard? What's even the problem that we're trying to solve?
So there were many design decisions on how to do splicing. Like, how do you increase the capacity of a channel? Because what a Lightning channel is, it is basically a UTXO on chain.
Uh-huh.
So that has a certain capacity.
Right. It has a fixed capacity. There's no way to add something to an existing UTXO.
No.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the challenge we're trying to solve.
And multiple ways people were trying to do that. So, for example, René Picard, he mentioned maybe we could have like two UTXOs in the same channel or there are other design
decisions.
And
then replace one at a time, something like that?
Yeah.
I mean, this is obviously not what we don't have to get into, that would be the general sort of idea there. Yeah, okay. But that's not what splicing is.
That's
okay.
Not what splicing is.
So,
because with splicing, what you do is you spend the funding transaction. So the funding transaction is your channel on chain, right?
Uh-huh.
And then off chain, you have a bunch of commitment transactions, which are the previous states of your Lightning channel.
Yeah, every time Shosh and I update our channel, we're getting a new off chain transaction that spends from the UTXO, basically, and we're not broadcasting that initially.
Yeah, and all these transactions are valid transactions, and you would be able to broadcast them at any time, but only one of them is the latest, and you will. But with splicing, what you do is you spend the funding transaction. And with that transaction that spends the funding transaction, you add an input to that if you want to increase the channel capacity. Or you add an output to that if you want to decrease the channel capacity, basically.
Okay, we're spending basically all the funds from the channel, from the UTXO, to a new UTXO, which then becomes the channel, I would assume, right?
Yeah, that then becomes the channel, yeah.
Okay,
so from the outside, this would look, but we'll get to that, I guess, towards the end. It looks like you're closing the channel and you're just opening another channel, but there is magic involved, which means that the existing channel continues.
Yes.
Yeah, so let's get there, because for now, it would sound like you can't use the new channel until the new channel would confirm, or kind of, right? That's sort of at least where my mind is going to when I hear this.
And you're sort of right.
Okay.
Because when we're spending this funding transaction, we have to update the states. Every time a new payment will come in after that, we'll have to update the states on both of our channels, like our old channel and our new channel. We have to update the states on both of them.
Because wait, we don't small know. Note.
Yeah.
Of course, I would assume, but please just confirm. So when you are splicing, this has to be cooperative between both parties, right? This can't be. Okay. So that's the only way you can do it. You have to both agree we're going to update this channel. And that's how you spend the coins from the UTXO to the new UTXO.
And then you have to do duplicate bookkeeping, because I guess the question is, you just made a transaction, but it's in the mempool and it may or may not confirm. If it doesn't confirm, then the splice never happened.
Yeah.
So you'd better have all the transactions that keep happening while your channel is in this phase. You'd better remember all those transactions as if the channel was never spliced in. But if it does confirm, well, then the original things didn't happen. So somebody could lie, cheat you that way. So you really have to pretend that you have two identical channels and update them both at the same time.
Well, hang on. Atomically. I mean, I am following, but I also think you're skipping ahead.
Okay.
So I think what you say sounds right. But let's go back to the challenge. The challenge is it's not confirmed yet.
Yeah.
So how can you use an unconfirmed UTXO as a channel when it's not confirmed? Isn't that like a risk, right?
If we hook into what Shors was saying, then you had an old channel on chain, right? And this channel is on chain, and it has these off-chain commitment transactions.
Mm-hmm.
So these off-chain commitment transactions can be broadcast at any time and spend our channel. And if that ever happens, then our new spliced in channel that's in the mempool will never be the truth.
Right. That could become a double spend essentially. So that could be rejected if one of the channel states is broadcast before the splicing transaction is confirmed, right? That's what you say. Yeah. Okay. I get that.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
So that's one of the scenarios. And the other scenario would be that eventually our splicing transaction confirms. And maybe that's closed later as well, but let's just assume that the splice transaction confirms. So what you have to do during this period...
Well, the problem with that...
Let's say I have, you know, before the splice, all the money was on my side. A while before the splice, all the money was on my side. But then it moved to your side, and then we do the splice. And if the splice then happens, now could I just cheat and like try to cheat with the original transaction? Because all these punishment transactions that you have won't work anymore because we have just created a new on-chain transaction. So all these old penalty transactions don't work anymore. So that needs to be solved.
So in the old, you're talking about the old channel or the...
Yeah, so I would, you know, before, can I still cheat with the transactions from before the old channel was closed? I know the answer, I'm asking it.
You can still cheat with those. Yes, absolutely. But because your peer has the revocation key for these transactions, he can then steal all your money in that channel. So in that case, if you are stealing from like the old channel, right? Mm-hmm. Then your commitment transaction will confirm. And then because you were cheating, I can then spend the funds in that channel all for myself.
But if I understand correctly, after the splice is confirmed, then I can no longer cheat with the old transactions, right? Because those old cheat transactions won't work anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Those won't work anymore because the UTXO is spent. So
it's like you have a blank slate basically every time you do this.
Yeah, so once the splice transaction confirms, you can actually drop all the old states that you had
once it confirms, yeah.
Yeah, once it's deeply confirmed, basically, and you're sure that it won't be reorged out.
But I think the question we were still getting at, or the answer we were still getting at, is how can you safely use a channel before it's confirmed? That's sort of that's the key question here, right?
That's the key question. And the trick how we're doing that is that we're actually using both channels at the same time. We're using every state update that we do to the channel, we're doing them on the old channel and on the new channel.
Right.
So then what happens if I try to spend more than is in the old channel?
Yeah, so that won't work during this period. You will only be able to spend... So if you added funds to the channel, mm-hmm. you will only be able to spend the additional funds after the transaction is deeply confirmed.
Okay, so basically for a while we have like a quantum channel. It could still go either way, and therefore we're updating both to keep track of each other, keep them in balance.
Yeah. Or to scare the regulators, it's a shadow bookkeeping.
No, it's not shadow bookkeeping, people. No.
Anyway, so Shorsh and I, if we're splicing and then we keep transaction or forwarding transactions, blah, blah, we'll keep using Lightning, then we're doing everything double. We're just updating the old channel and the new channel until the new channel is confirmed on the chain.
Yep.
Now we can forget about the old channel. Now we just have the new channel.
Yeah,
right?
And while we're waiting, we cannot use the extra capacity that was added because we have to take into account the smallest of the two.
Right.
The smallest of the two, yeah, exactly. Because you could also have removed funds and then it's basically the new lower balance that is that's the limit there.
Okay. Well, that sounds actually kind of straightforward to me, but I would imagine there's a lot more sort of nitty-gritty to, like, how does the rest of the network, for example, know that this is the same channel rather than a complete new channel? Do they need to know? They need to have the routing information, for example, I would say.
They need to have the routing information, but they won't know that this is the same channel.
They'll consider it a different channel.
They'll consider it a different channel.
Okay.
But there is a little thing there, and maybe we can skip to that now, because your old channel was gossiped through the gossip network, and like it's a sender that wants to route through your channel. He has a graph of the Lightning network on his local node, and he had that channel inside his graph, right? And as soon as you spend that channel on chain, he would consider that channel closed.
Mm-hmm.
So now the sender wouldn't be able to use your channel because he thinks it's closed and the splice transaction hadn't confirmed yet. So in the bolts, there is a...
bolts means improvement for Lightning.
Yes.
Basics of Lightning.
Basics of Lightning technology.
Yeah, right. Basically a BIP for Lightning.
Yeah. And there they say that once a channel closes on chain, you should wait now for 12 blocks before you actually remove this channel from your channel graph.
Mm-hmm.
And because we're doing this, now for these 12 blocks, we would still be able to be trying the old channel.
Mm-hmm.
And after the splice transaction confirms, Gossip will probably reach us in time to make us learn about the new channel.
It will happen almost immediately, right? Because the moment the splice confirms is the moment that other nodes, when they see that block, they all think that channel is gone. But at that point, the gossip is being spread that there is a new channel in town. And so there might be a few seconds in between those two moments, but for those seconds, you don't want to think that the channel is gone.
But what's the benefit of keeping the old channel in like memory for 12 blocks? Like if you try to use it, will these peers themselves just figure, oh, well, that channel doesn't exist, but we have a new one. Yes. We updated it. They'll just figure it out.
That's where the double bookkeeping comes in, right? They see a transaction for the old channel, but they'll honor it for the new channel. Well, I guess this is after confirmation, so there's another trick for that then.
Yes,
we're talking after confirmation, yes.
So we're talking after confirmation.
So are the peers smart enough to just forward it anyways?
Which peer are you talking about right now?
So I'm trying to pay you, Jesse.
Yeah.
And I see that you have a channel with Shores.
Yeah.
And you guys just spliced and it's confirmed. And I have a channel with Shores. So now it's still in my memory that you had the old one. So now I'm trying to send it to you through Shores.
Yeah.
Is Shores smart enough? To figure out that he has this channel with you still, even though I was not.
Yeah, Shorts is smart enough
to do that.
We
stopped the double bookkeeping, right? Yeah.
Yeah, Shorts will be smart enough to do that.
I could have known that Shorts was smart enough for that.
Yeah.
Well done, Shorts.
Thank you.
Okay, that answers that question. Okay, so that's why it sticks in memory for essentially 12 confirmations. Yeah.
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 Right.
Now, I think we need to go back a little bit to talk about something fundamental. Underway.
Yeah, something fundamental is underway. So the way a splice begins,
mm-hmm.
We want to make sure that there's no funky stuff going on in our channel while we're doing all this complicated business initiating a new splice.
Yeah, so it's not this time that it's confirming in the mempool. It's really the time between we like to splice and the moment we submit a transaction to the rest of the network. And that period of time is like a second.
Yeah.
To the outside world, but to computers, that is an eternity in which many, many things can go wrong in that one very second.
Yeah, like the funky stuff, I meant adding HTLCs basically to your channel or removing HTLCs.
Yeah, so we're in the middle of a conversation about building a splice. It's a very intense conversation. And then Aaron comes in and is like, please forward this for me. Yeah. And we're like, no, not right now.
This is complicated enough as it is.
Come back in 1 million microseconds. Yeah.
I'm back at 0.6 seconds.
So
I don't have that type of time, Shores.
No, so you would see your transaction fail, basically, during that 1 second.
I'll go somewhere else if you don't want to help me within 0.6 seconds.
Yeah.
All right, got it. Okay, so that's the actual time that it takes to say, hey, do you want to splice? Yeah, I want to splice. Let's splice. In that time, you can't route. That's the computers can't route in that time.
Yeah, okay. Computer can't route. So, and that's because we have initiated quiescence.
How do you pronounce that?
We Googled it and we believe it is quiescence.
Quiescence.
Or quiescence, I guess, if you're American.
Mm-hmm.
When I read it, I thought it was quiescence, but internet says quiescence. So, so you send a STFU message to your peer.
Is this an actual term?
This is the actual term. It stands for something fundamental is underway.
Yes, dear children listening, do not Google these letters.
And then your peer sends back.
No, that doesn't add up. You said SFTU, and it stands for what?
Something fundamental is underway.
Oh my God.
Something. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Anyways, enough.
And
keep it straight. What were you saying? Something fundamental is underway.
Yeah. Go on. What we're saying is now we're going to quiescent mode, and now we're not going to update our channel until we're finished negotiating the splice.
Okay.
Then we're going to say to the peer, like, okay, I want to do a splice for this extra amount and for this fee rate. And what we're then going to do is we're going to start the interactive transaction construction protocol. And that's
cool.
Yeah, that's a new protocol that's been merged into the Bolt spec last month.
Very new.
Very new. Because it's merged in the Bolt spec, that means that at least two implementations implemented that already.
Mm-hmm.
And with this, it's basically what it does. It's you say like add an output to this transaction, add an input to this transaction, remove an output, remove an input, and you're going to negotiate what the new funding transaction will look like.
Right. And I guess this is different from how things worked before, where one side would just say, this is going to be the transaction, like it or don't like it, just sign it. And now this is a more sophisticated conversation.
Yes. Right? Yes,
exactly. Does it use PSBT?
It uses PSBT, yeah.
Cool. We did an episode about that.
Long time ago.
And so this interactive construction protocol is also used in a new protocol in the Bolt. It's called Open Channel V2. And that's a version 2 of the opening channel protocol. And that also allows for RBF,
mm-hmm.
Which means that splices also allow for RBF.
And so does anybody who would use this for opening a new channel, because in theory you could use it for that too, could now also use RBF, right?
Yeah.
I think you said nobody's implemented it.
Yeah, so I think nobody's implemented it for normal channel opens yet.
But I can imagine it's very useful for a zero confirmation channel, for example, where a service provider opens a channel to you. There's some wallets that will give you a zero confirmation channel briefly. That's a risk you're taking as the recipient. And then they might say, well, we're just going to pay one Satoshi per fee byte. And then if we start worrying as a service provider, then we'll just increase the fee to make sure that it confirms.
Right, yeah. And it makes sense in any situation to be able to RBF a transaction. And you've seen that in the last periods where the fee rates were changing a lot, right? So mm-hmm. if the fee rates are increasing a lot, then you definitely run into problems of channels not confirming.
Yeah.
And after 2 weeks, then your peer forgets about the channel altogether. And so your funding transaction will be worthless.
Right.
So that's cool features in the Bolt spec as well.
Okay.
So now that we've negotiated the transaction.
Uh-huh.
And after negotiating transaction, we exchange signatures for this transaction. And once we've negotiated signatures, then we're out of quiescence mode.
Yeah, and then the double bookkeeping starts basically. Then the splicing starts, which we discussed, starts.
Yes.
Until the new transaction is confirmed.
Yes, until the new transaction is confirmed. Or if it's like a zero conf channel, so a channel that doesn't need any confirmations, basically you will be instantly able to use the...
Oh, that's also possible.
Yeah, that's possible. Like if you have a channel with Shores and you trust Shores that he won't double spend your channel, you could do a zero conf channel with Shores.
Okay. Does this cover splicing? I want to ask you who's implemented, but unless there's something more to say, like about the technical details.
Yeah, I think it covers most of the technical details. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So splicing was not in Lightning since day one, obviously.
No.
Right. But still now it's not like a standard thing, right? It's still a work in progress. So, but there are implementations that have this, or what's the status of splicing?
Yeah, so the spec is still a work in progress and it's still being negotiated exactly how the spec should look like.
Oh, even the spec is still open for discussion.
Yeah, there's a few things in the spec, like how many confirmations a splice has. Like you should be able to negotiate the confirmations before the splice is locked.
Uh-huh.
There's also for the gossip protocol, maybe they want to add a feature, a bit to the gossip messages saying, oh, this channel is a splice channel. And yeah, there's a few like a bit more minor things. And one of the bigger things is in a channel, you have a channel reserve. So 1% of your of each side of the channel has each side of the channel has 1% of the channel capacity as reserve, and you're not allowed to spend this 1% in the channel. And so that
Why?
Means because you always want your peer to have something to lose.
You always want to be able to.
Yeah.
Punish your peer.
You want to be able to punish
your peer. You want to inflict pain on your peer, potentially.
Yes.
Okay. So, and 1%, so this is true for all Lightning channels?
Yeah, basically all Lightning channels, yeah. And I work for Breeze, but with Breeze, the clients don't have a channel reserve because with Breeze, we know, like, we are always online.
Mm-hmm.
So you basically wouldn't be able to cheat us
mm-hmm.
even if you tried, because we have like a 2-week period in which we can broadcast and transaction on chain, so we're all right with that. So you could configure that,
but generally speaking, every Lightning channel has needs at least 1% for each peer.
Yeah,
but you can open a channel with 100% on one side, right?
Yeah, so this is an exception to the rule. Like once you've opened the channel, all the funds are on your side, so your peer won't have the 1% yet. But as soon as you send something to the other side, then they won't be able to spend that 1%.
As soon as the other peer has 1%, that needs to be stuck there, essentially.
Yeah. Right.
Okay, yeah.
But there's there's an issue with splicing, because let's say, Aaron, we have Lightning Channel, and now I decide to add a huge amount of funds on my side of the channel.
Mm.
Now your part of the channel dips below that 1% reserve. So they're still discussing like how should we handle this.
Okay, this is still part of the discussion of the spec, and there's no real... So if the spec is still being discussed, then I would think there's no implementation that has splicing yet, or are there...
Yeah, there are implementations that have splicing. You've got the Async team. They've implemented splicing in Eclair and in Phoenix.
Okay.
You've got the LDK. LDK has splicing support, and Core Lightning has splicing support as experimental feature.
Okay, and are these all compatible with each other?
So compatibility is part of, it's sort of happening now. Like this is the period that people will start... compatibility testing.
Right. What about Breeze?
And so the rule is...
We're working on this.
Oh, so the rule is that once two different implementations are compatible, that's when a spec is final or can be made final.
Yeah.
But there needs to be at least two different implementations that are compatible. And the only way to find out if things are compatible is to actually build it, because that's how you run into the things you did not think about in the design. So I think that's a sane strategy, but the problem is, and I think we've talked about that in earlier episodes, different Lightning projects like LND or Core Lightning or whoever, they all have their own priorities. And so if they all literally have just one pet project and they don't pay attention to any of the other projects, then nothing happens, because there's never two different implementations. And this is one reason why things can take a while. You need to have at least two that happen to have the same priority, but there's no Lightning CEO out there.
No, exactly. And yeah, by the way, LND also has it on the roadmap for somewhere in the future.
Yeah, I thought they had it years ago, but apparently I'm just wrong about that. I remember writing an article, but maybe it was like one of these articles about what's in store for the future of Lightning that I wrote like 5 years ago. I don't know.
Eventually, like, it's still the same things in the store.
Right. They seem to stick in production for a while.
Yeah, and I guess one observation I could make is that the reason why Phoenix can use Lightning in the wild, because they really are shipping it as part of their tap swap. Is it tap swap? Swap root? Oh, yeah, swap root protocol, which is swapping and using Taproot and using music and other cool stuff. They can use that in the wild because their wallets only connect to the Eclair node. And so even though, you know, the spec is not completely fleshed out, they have control over which nodes you're connecting to. So the app is not going to break, even if it's not completely following the spec yet, because the spec is still being changed. Now, I assume they have thought about, you know, safety, because everybody can, you know, it's open source, the Phoenix app, so you can look at it and see how it works, and you can change it and make it misbehave. And presumably they've made, you know, they've made it strong enough that it will survive abuse, but it may not be compatible yet with other nodes.
Exactly that. Yeah.
Can you splice from a splice?
Yeah, you can splice from a splice.
You can splice update.
Spliceception.
Yeah.
You can have a chain of unconfirmed splices. And yeah, so what happens then is then you have a transaction that spends a transaction, that spends a transaction, that spends a transaction. And
but they have to all confirm on chain.
Yeah. Basically, they should eventually confirm on chain.
All
because
of them.
I think one question we hoped you would be able to answer is, can you change the splice? Can you splice a splice that is in progress but not confirm? We know we can RBF it, so we can increase the fee of the splice, but could also change the size of the splice?
That should work, right? Like, that would be better. That way,
it sounds like the spec would be even more complicated.
So I think that should work in some circumstances. But yeah, you do fall into issues with will the mempool accept my new RBF to splice? So yeah, I'm not sure how implementations do this, where the restrictions are in this.
Okay, well, that's getting a bit into the weeds.
But the one thing I wanted to say about these chains of unconfirmed splices is that then you have to, for every channel update, you have to update all of these.
And the same goes for RBF, right? Every time you RBF, you have to update everything? Or is RBF done more efficiently?
Yeah, with the RBF, exactly, that's the same. Yeah, so every time you RBF, it's basically like a new splice, so you have to,
Have to have 10 times the number of, you have to, every transaction you make, every HDLC you forward, you have to keep track of it in 10 different ways.
Yes.
Right. Okay. I think that kind of covers it, because we're getting into weird weeds now. So I would assume that the main splicing topic has been covered now, right? Did we miss anything?
No, we got it all.
Okay, excellent. Awesome. Well, Jesse, thanks for coming back. Do you want to pitch where people can find you or something like that?
People can find me on Twitter and on Nostr. I bet it's going to be in the show notes.
It will be.
I will put it in the show notes, yeah.
All right, then. Aaron, do you have anything to add?
No, I'll see you soon. Sure.
All right, then. Thank you for listening to Bitcoin
Explained.